And I don't think people realize, or enough people, that J.D. Martinez is ninth in baseball in WOBA since getting to the Tigers in 2014. He has been a truly elite hitter who I don't think gets the credit that he deserves.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight. Hello and welcome to episode 142 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus. My usual co-host, Brett Sayer. He is off this week. He's on vacation. So no Brett, but we have Mike Gianella here as always. Mike, what's going on, buddy? It's been a pretty busy night. We're recording this on Tuesday night. A lot going on. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, we'll talk about this in the show, but there's already been a trade. And as we're recording this just after 9 p.m. Eastern time, it looks like there might be a second trade. So as people like to say, the hot stove is hot.
It is sizzling right now. And speaking of sizzling, we have an awesome guest joining us for this edition of the podcast. He is a fantasy analyst for CBS Sports and a co-host of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. He is Chris Towers. Chris, what's going on, buddy? Thanks for being here.
You guys, I'm doing great. You guys kind of buried the lead a little bit. Because we also, like, beyond the two pretty major trades going down in the last few hours, and obviously my presence, we have the number one shortstop in baseball probably have his season finish. Today has been a crazy day.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we didn't even mention that, or put that in the rundown. But that's a pretty good point as well. And you know, it's funny because a couple people pointed this out on Twitter today. I think Mark Simon of ESPN mentioned this. You know, a lot of people we do this at BP. I don't know if you do this at CBS. They do their preseason picks, and like a couple people, not a lot. You know, most people pick Trout, but a couple people had Correa as their MVP this year. So yeah, you know, the expectations for him were kind of high. Like, I mean, he hasn't exactly been a disappointment this year, but I think after that half season he had his rookie year, people look at him not as a disappointment, maybe as like someone who hasn't lived up to expectations, you know, even though he's having a really good year.
Yeah, I mean, I remember at the preseason last year, there were a lot of inner office debates about whether we were overrating Carlos Correa. He was going like second half of the first round. I remember him going fifth overall coming into his second year, and that just seemed crazy to me. But this year, he's pretty much been that good. Like, the stolen bases haven't been there, but like, he's been awesome. The breakout that we were hoping for last year has happened, and now he's probably going to not even set a career high in home runs because he's going to play 15 games fewer than he did in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic. You look at George Springer as sort of the catalyst of that offense, you know, setting the table and getting things going, but Correa has been really the machine in the middle of that order. So, yeah, it's a big blow. In case you missed the news somehow, Carlos Correa has a torn ligament in his left thumb. He's expected to miss at least 6 weeks, possibly eight. So you're looking at maybe a September return, but even that is up in the air. So, yeah, big news. And that's when that's not even the biggest news of the day, you know you're having a big day in fantasy baseball. So we've got Chris Towers here. We've got a great show. We're going to discuss a lot of the trade deadline moves and a whole lot more. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can subscribe today to Baseball Prospectus with a one-year premium membership. You can follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. And Chris is at C Towers CBS. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio app, or wherever you get the podcast. If you love the show and you love what we do, help support us out and go leave us a rating or review. That would help us out tremendously. So let's start, guys, with the big news of the night. I think you have to begin with J.D. Martinez. He was traded to the Arizona Diamondbacks for three prospects. And I'll start with you, Chris, your immediate reaction to J.D. Martinez going to Arizona, because I think this is a fascinating trade. Martinez is one of my favorite players in baseball. He's been fantastic since his arrival in Detroit in 2014. So what are your initial impressions of J.D. Martinez moving to the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, one thing, also one of my favorite players in the game, graduated high school with him.
Really?
So I've always felt, yeah, we had Algebra 2 together senior year.
Did you guys talk about launch angles?
We had a lot of sports debates because I think that was the Algebra 2 class where, like, you needed to graduate Algebra 2 and it was the second half of your senior year and they just threw you in that class. And that was my situation. I don't want to speak for him. I don't want to besmirch him, but that was my situation. And I don't think people realize, or enough people, that J.D. Martinez is ninth in baseball in WOBA since getting to the Tigers in 2014. He has been a truly elite hitter who I don't think gets the credit that he deserves. Part of that, I think, is injuries. Part of that is that's the only knock against him, isn't it? Like, he missed some time this year. He's only played more than 123 games once. But when he's on the field, he's a 300 hitter. He has, you know, one of the best power hitters in baseball. He's phenomenal. And I think the move to Arizona is obviously a good one. The lineup's a little better, and it's a better park for him.
Yeah, just looking at some of the park factors, Chase Field, obviously they're putting in the humidor next year, and that hasn't taken effect yet. So it's a big upgrade. Comerica Park is just huge. I mean, it is hard to put a ball out there, and he's got the type of power where he can do it. But you put him in a park like Chase Field, and that's a huge upgrade. And then, you know, moving in the lineup, he's going to bat fifth behind Goldschmidt and Lamb, and you got Pollock and Peralta at the top there. This is a pretty formidable lineup. So, Mike, if you're – I know we're going to talk more from a mono league standpoint with Fab and everything like that, but just overall, this feels like kind of a big deal for J.D. Martinez, a guy we at BP had as an elite outfielder already just a few months ago when we updated our rankings on the site.
Yeah, it's really hard to, you know, it's hard for a guy like this to get bumped up too much, but I would agree that J.D. Martinez is someone I'd probably move up. You know, we're not drafting at this point, but, you know, if you're looking at it that way in a mixed league, it's probably about a round's worth of players, like 12 or 15 players. You don't change his ranking too much, but there should be more power for him. You know, the one thing is he is moving out of the American League, but that shouldn't impact him too much one way or the other moving to the West. You know, it'll be nice for him to play in Arizona and when he gets to go to Coors, but he will have to face you know, Clayton Kershaw and that Dodgers rotation a bit more. So, you know, these are things that really don't have that much of an impact. So generally when I look at an elite hitter going one way, you know, or the other way, it's not much of a material change. You know, if you're in an NL only, you're pretty much going to want to, you know, put your bank down or almost all your bank down on him, you know, this coming weekend.
I think what's fascinating about this from a fantasy strategy standpoint, if you're in a mono league, if you're in an NL only, is if you had a shot to acquire Jose Quintana last weekend, I think you probably did, right? Like, you threw all the Fab down, or whoever got him probably did. And now J.D. Martinez is thrown in the picture. So this goes back to what we talk about every year around this time. Is it better to wait until the deadline, or do you pounce at the first guy because you don't know who's ultimately coming over, right?
You know, usually, Chris, and if you listen to the show, you know this, we do a Fab rundown. You know, this week, since we have you as a guest and you're, you know, not in any of those leagues, and quite honestly, outside of Quintana, there wasn't much activity in any of the expert leagues I cover. So I won Quintana in Tout Wars. I had the second highest amount of money. I bid I had the second highest amount of money. I bid what Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN had as his bankroll because I'm behind him in the standings and I would win the tiebreaker that way. So it's $1,000 budget. I bid $866 out of my remaining $880. So I've got $14 to spend. And, you know, Scott White in the CBS league that you and I are in together, it's a little bit different because it's daily moves. Scott bid $95 out of $100.
Yeah.
So similar philosophy. Now what's interesting is I'll get to this with you. I don't know how much money you had in CBS. I had 65 and I bid all of it. I knew I wouldn't get him. But Derek Carty of ESPN and a couple other sites, he had more money, and this happened to him both in labor and tout, and he didn't bid because he has Clayton Kershaw in both of those leagues. He has Rich Hill in tout. He has very strong pitching. He has very weak offense.
He's waiting for a header.
Yeah, he's waiting for a hitter, and these expert leagues, you know this from being in them, and CBS might be a little bit worse than tout or labor, but there's almost no trading. It's not like a home league where you know all the guys and you see them all the time, or you shoot each other emails and give each other crap. It's much more formal and stiff. So Derek knows, he knows that he's not going to, getting Quintana and adding 4 points in tout to his pitching isn't going to do anything for him. If the hitter doesn't come through, it's like, well, that stinks, but it wouldn't have helped anyway. So in this case, it paid off. Generally, my philosophy is to get the guy and kind of worry later about who might or might not come over. So first of all, what did you do in CBS in terms of Quintana? How much fab did you have? And in general, what's your philosophy, Chris, as far as that goes?
I didn't go after Quintana, but I do agree. And that's one that I've just got so many leagues that every once in a while something just falls through the cracks. And so that was the issue for me. But I generally agree that there's an opportunity cost to waiting. And we got lucky, I guess, if you didn't bid on Jose Quintana, that another better player switched over to the NL immediately afterwards and gave you another opportunity if you passed up. But there's no guarantee that we're going to see another player switch teams. There's probably a better than 50% chance that any given player will be moved to another league just because there's fewer teams available. Teams might be more willing to move someone to another league, but I feel like you're playing the odds that are really tough to chase in a situation like that. And if there's a guy out there who can help you make a run, I think you go for it right there.
I think we've almost seen a shift, and you kind of alluded to it, Chris, that with the extra wild card, now fewer teams view themselves as sellers. Everyone thinks, I'm only a couple of games out. Like, the Royals were in this position. They made a little bit of a run there before the All-Star break, and they're going, well, why would we trade Mike Moustakas or Kelvin Herrera? Like, why don't we give this one more shot? Maybe we get hot and we make a run here. So I just think you're seeing fewer sellers, so there's a lot more volatility, right, from that standpoint. You just don't know what's going to happen or who's going to come over or if anyone's going to switch leagues, really.
You look at the standings, and this actually might be something to keep in mind with your league-specific teams, is that there's really only, three teams that are realistically completely out of it in the American League. The Tigers obviously moving J.D. Martinez. They're throwing in the towel. The White Sox, we know what they are. Oakland, same thing. Everyone else is pretty much 3.5 back at this point. I think the Blue Jays might be 5 back of the second wild card right now. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, there's not that much. There's not that many teams that are definitely out of it in the American League. And it might make it tough for, we might see more, you might expect more players moving from the NL to the AL than the other way around this season. And that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Although what's really weird about that is so far in the interleague trades, everybody has gone to the NL. You've had Quintana, you've had Martinez, and now you've had, you had it over the weekend, you had Doolittle and Madsen. And, it's funny, I didn't even put that on the rundown, but that's kind of an interesting situation too, because, that trade was completed Sunday. Now in tout and labor, we couldn't bid on them because there's a 24-hour rule, which I think makes sense. It's Sunday, you're with your family. I know some people put their bids in on Saturday. It's not really, I've talked about this on the show. I hate first come first serve leagues. I actually like the way CBS does it with the daily, like our league, Chris, with the daily moves and the weekly lineups, because it gives you a reward for being active, but it's a 24-hour fab period. So it's not like, oh, it's 4 o'clock. Everyone else is offline and there was a trade, I'm going to get the first guy that comes in. Like, I feel like that's just stupid.
I play in a 30-team NBA fantasy league. Ugh. And for like 4 years, the first 4 years I was in it, it was first come first serve. And it was just like, that's how you decide to leave. Like, that's, you've got a few people who are, you've got people who are covering the games as they're happening. And so, you know, if there was one year when Hassan Whiteside literally won someone the league because he had like 5 rebounds in a 4-minute span in the middle of the second quarter and someone picked him up and he became a must start stud in a 30 team league. And that, yeah, first come first served is, I'm fine with it, like the way football works, where if you have a waiver wire date and everyone knows Monday is when you get your waiver wire claims, and if someone doesn't get claimed, then it's free for all.
But even that's different. I mean, that's different. You know, I was in a league, an expert league last year. It was all first, and it was baseball, and it was a 12-team mix. It was all first come, first serve, and the guys in the top three were, I think, people who worked for this website who were like interns and pretty much had all the time in the world to just sit on their app and, you know, it was an ESPN league, you know, send their app and make moves. And kind of like, well, I mean, yeah, that's really good that you have the time to do this. But at that point, it's not really a contest of a fantasy skill. It's a contest of who doesn't have a life.
So, yeah. And that's kind of this, you know, to keep it a 10,000 foot view. That's also kind of why I don't love daily lineups, because it's kind of the same thing where you're not rewarding the person who's best at identifying talent and projecting. You're rewarding the person who is most ornery about setting their lineup, assuming you don't have games played limits or innings limits, obviously.
Yeah, I'm in an Otnu league, and it's kind of like that. It's the first time I played Otnu, and there's things I like about it, but the daily lineup setting, it just feels like a task.
Yeah, it's too much work, man. I know it's my job, but I still, you know, I've got a lot of work with my job besides the lineup setting.
Yeah, I understand. We don't do this full time, but even for me, like doing, you know, having another job full time, you know, writing 2 articles a week. And I spend, even with the weekly leagues, and I'm in 6 leagues, which probably sounds like nothing to you, but I spend a good couple hours, like at a set time aside, like, to do that. And you know what's funny about only leagues? I think some people think only leagues are easier, but what happens in only leagues, I deliberate a lot about some of these decisions. I sat there, and I didn't pick him up, so don't worry, but I sat there for 2 hours on Sunday night thinking about whether I should take Travis Wood or not in labor ale because he had a 2-start week coming up.
So what you guys are saying is you don't have a lot of time to sit on your apps. It sounds like such a millennial thing, by the way. That's a great term. So a little bit of shameless self-promotion here. I wrote up the transaction analysis, the fantasy impact for the Nationals and A's swap there. And Chris, I'd be interested in your take on it, because to me it feels like Ryan Madsen's the safer option if you're going to pick up Madsen, or you're going to probably at this point, if you're listening now and you haven't already gone out and picked him up, you're going to have to trade for him. But, you know, Doolittle feels like the better reliever. It's just one of those things where would you opt for the security of a guy like Madsen, where he's odds on, you know, favorite to take that job, or would you want to speculate maybe that Doolittle's able to take that job and really be sort of an elite closer down the stretch?
Well, it just, I know he had a role as Chapman, so that kind of changes things. But it doesn't feel like a Dusty Baker thing to do to trust a lefty in the closer's role. Like, Aroldis Chapman was so good that he didn't have a choice, really. But it just, it doesn't seem like something that traditional managers like to do or feel comfortable with, because they want to have the flexibility to use the lefty, you know, when it's not a... I'm trying to think of like a good left-handed hit. Freddie Freeman comes into the game. You want to have your Sean Doolittle available in the eighth inning, regardless of the fact that Sean Doolittle's just awesome against everybody. It feels like Dusty Baker's the kind of manager who's going to want the flexibility to have Sean Doolittle whenever. Yeah. And Ryan Madsen becomes the closer by default. But I'm not sure, and the Nationals don't sound like they're sure that they're done making moves.
Right, that's the other part of it. I mean, given Madsen's age and injury history, that always has to be in the back of your head. But you're right, I envision him as more of a fireman coming in the middle innings if they need a big out, or, like you said, situational against lefty hitters. So, yeah, I'd be fascinated to see if they go out and get somebody else. But, Mike, Do we have any other thoughts on Jose Quintana? We didn't talk about it last week because it happened the day after we recorded the show. So is there anything fantasy owners need to know about Quintana to the Cubs that matters that we haven't discussed already with him? Just want to kind of wrap everything up here on the trade side of things.
I know his numbers this year weren't particularly good, but even so, I think anyone in the know knew he was better than that. Yeah. You know, now he moves to the NL. He gets to face the pitcher once or twice a game. You know, we've already seen with the strikeouts that they've gone up. He also feels like one of those pitchers to me. You know, he went from a non-contender in a team that was, you know, which is going to look great in 2 or 3 years, but clearly not playing for this year, to a team that, even though they're 500 or were a little bit worse before the break, is going for it. I feel like psychologically there's going to be a bit of a boost for him. And, you know, he's somebody who's probably owned everywhere except for a 10-team mix. But I'd pick him up in that situation. You know, if you can trade for him, certainly get him. You know, odds are his fantasy owners are just going to hang on to him. But, you know, if you can get him in a trade, I'd treat him not like an ace, but probably like the next level down.
Yeah, Chris, it feels like Quintana's had this weird career trajectory from a fantasy standpoint where he was always so underrated. And now it's got to the point now he's so underrated, he's overrated. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird to analyze him.
It felt like the general perception of Jose Quintana really shifted this preseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really just because he won 4 extra games. Like, that was really it. He won 9 games 3 years in a row, and it felt like that was analysts obviously didn't view him as someone who couldn't win 10 games, but it felt like he was just kind of a guy. That's a term we've been using a lot in CBS to just describe players that, like, it's fine if you own, if you don't, it's fine. They're just a guy.
Yeah.
And it felt like he was treated as just a guy for a long time, and he really wasn't any different last season than he has been for years. And I think he's really good. I think he's a top 25 to top 30 starting pitcher. But he doesn't have a ton of upside, maybe. He's probably not going to give you, you know, this low 2s, mid 2s ERA, but there aren't a lot of guys who can do that anyway. And I think Jose Quintana probably still underrated, but you also miss your opportunity to buy low.
Right, like the durability is one of the big things. Like, he was one of, I think, 14 guys who had 200 innings a year ago. He's done it 5 straight years, on pace for a 6th this year. So, yeah, you know what you're getting when you draft Quintana, and that's valuable. Like you said, like a top 25 guy. All right, Todd Frazier. I know as we're recording this, it's not official. I don't know if you guys have seen anything in the last, you know, half hour or so, but it sounds like he's going to the Yankees. How much does this matter? Because Todd Frazier, his batting average is terrible, but it feels like he's a guy who could get on a little bit of a hot streak and matter a little bit in deeper leagues, right?
He's someone I've dismissed, another Jag, just a guy, and a big part of it for me is just that, like, he's just a home run guy at this point in his career, and maybe now that he's in New York, you can rely on him for a little more run production and a much better lineup. But if he's just giving you home runs in an era where it seems like 25 middle infielders hit 25 home runs,
mm-hmm.
how valuable is 37 home runs if it comes with, you know, a real batting average tanking type of number?
He's essentially Chris Carter, like Astros Chris Carter at that point, right?
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, not good. That's what, but then, like, he does have a 214 BABIP, which is so low that it has to improve, right?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Mike, I feel like we kind of hit on this Frazier point the last couple of preseasons where there were some major red flags in the profile and the underlying skills and the strikeout rate and the batted ball profile, and now it's just kind of all come together and he's kind of cratered. Do you see any hope for Frazier now that he gets a sort of a change of scenery, as you would say, from a narrative standpoint, right?
Yeah, assuming this goes through, you know, we've got like the weird thing where we're recording this, and by the time, you know, people are listening to this, I presume later tomorrow, they'll know if this trade happened or if it fell through. But assuming it happens, assuming Frazier goes to the Yankees, you know, left-handers get helped a lot more by that park than right-handers. It's certainly a good hitter's park for right-handers. But moving from, you know, I was going to say the cell, but now it's guaranteed rate field to Yankee Stadium. It's, you know, I don't have to go look at the park factors, but it's not really much of a boost for him there. So really, you know, I kind of agree with everything Chris said. You know, Frazier's somebody who, you know, unless you're in an on-base league where, you know, he's putting up a, you know, close to 330 and,
yeah,
you know, he's walking 14% of the time. Yeah, everything else, I agree. You know, 30 home runs or so, which is what he's on pace for, maybe a little bit less. It's like, I mean, that's good, but when it comes with that 207 batting average,
yeah,
that stinks. And yeah, the BABIP should go up, but, you know, now we're looking at a guy 2 years in a row, you know, 236 last year, 214.
Right.
You know, the weirdest thing about Frazier to me is that he's not a strikeout guy. Like, he's not somebody, usually these BABIP fluctuators or bad BABIP guys, they strike out 35-40% of the time. His rate is 21%. If you had asked me without looking at his page what his rate was, I would have said it was like 30-35%. So I just don't know. Yeah, he could hit 270 or 280 in Yankee Stadium and have a bit of a bounce there, but I really just don't have a good feeling about him. It looks like Brett Sayre, who was really down on him coming into the season, was dead on here.
Yeah, what he actually and you mentioned the higher strikeout guys tend to see more fluctuation in their BABIP. He's a little like a less extreme version of where Albert Pujols has been the last few years, where he's just kind of turned into one. This year he's been almost nothing, but the last few years he's been really just an all or nothing power hitter, and thankfully he gets to hit behind Mike Trout and drives in 100 runs anyway. But, you know, his batting average on balls in play is so low, and I think Todd Frazier just has the look of a guy who's just old. Like, he's just gotten really old, and he's only 31, but, like, if you showed me his profile, and you said you would have assumed his strikeout rate, if you showed me Todd Frazier's profile in his last few years, I would have assumed he was, like, 35.
It's not great. Not great out there. Chris, you mentioned one thing, the home run surge, or the league-wide uptick in power.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, related to the baseballs and or whatever theory you want to. I think the juice ball theory, as it's been labeled, I think there is some merit to that. You actually did a really great podcast last week for everybody listening to this show. If you didn't check it out, you had Chris had Ben Lindbergh on, former editor-in-chief at Baseball Prospectus, writer at The Ringer. He's done a lot of great research on this topic, and he talked with Chris for a long time about this, so you should definitely go check that one out. Ben's really fun. That must have been a fun podcast to have him on, because he's just so good at explaining things that are very complex in simple terms, right? Like, he's so good at that.
It was, as like a baseball nerd, that was my dream podcast, because it wasn't just Ben Lindbergh. We also had Jonah Carey on for the second half of the podcast, and so that was just, for me, that was just like, this is everything I could have wanted. This is the best day ever. I got to talk to those two guys for like an hour combined, and it was just fantastic. And they were both exactly what you think, and it's really good. I obviously highly recommend you go check it out. It's from last Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah, they're really great. Jonah's awesome too. But Ben's, I mean, getting to work with him is really fun. So
yeah, we used to get to hang out with him at like the BP events, which was, you know, at least I did, like in the early days, which was also great.
Yeah, I got to do some effectively wild stuff too with him, and like, he's so easy to work with. It was great.
Seems like a great guy. I got to talk to him about Pokemon Go because he's got the video game podcast too.
Oh yeah, so that's right.
Nice. So now that you've been on Flags Fly Forever, you know, you can cross that off your bucket list too. You know what I mean? Oof,
I can die now.
It's been a big week for you, Chris, I gotta say. Awesome. Yeah. So hey, let's talk about an article that you wrote for CBS, and it relates to a guy I think is one of the more fascinating pitchers in fantasy baseball right now, and that's Luis Castillo. And Mike, I want your take on Castillo in a minute too, but, you know, Chris, you've been, I guess, advocating for Castillo because some of the volatility with pitching prospects and then just pitchers in general. I mean, it feels like even just this past week we had two more guys go down with Tommy John and Michael Pineda and Joe Ross. But it sounds like you're pretty sold here on Luis Castillo. What have you seen that's really impressed you with him so far, the rookie for the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, I've got a GIF from pitcherlist.com that's in that piece, and it's the first four pitches he threw in the majors. And if you look at that, that kind of tells the whole story. This is a guy who the first three pitches, it's 99, 100, and then this big sweeping slider to strike out Trey Turner. Trey Turner's a pretty good hitter. That's the first four pitches he threw in the majors. If that's the first four pitches I see from a guy, I'm running out to the waiver wire right now. I'm really impressed by him. I don't know if he can hold up as a starter. There's been questions about that with him coming up as kind of a fringy prospect, but he's been sustaining his velocity, throwing, averaging 97 miles an hour into the fifth and sixth innings, into the seventh in one of the games that he pitched that deep. His changeup looks like a legitimate swing and miss pitch, 22% swinging strike rate with that, which was kind of the biggest question for him coming into the season. And the way he's pitched in the majors, I'm thinking that this is a legitimate leap that a guy who was fringy and had some projectability left, even though he was older, I think he's made it. I think he's developed that second and third pitch, the slider and changeup, and he looks really, really special.
Yeah, so when you're cautiously optimistically ranking him, when you're doing your updates, I mean, what sort of tier or what range of pitchers do you sort of envision him fitting into right now? If you had to value him rest of season, like if I'm listening to this show and I want to go out and trade for Castillo if I don't own him, you know, what type of comp would you have value wise for him rest of season?
Man,
that's a tough question though. I know
it's a tough question, and we keep our rankings by position, and so I could see myself moving him into the 30 to 40 range. Mm-hmm. I really think the upside from that I've seen, and he's had a little bit of control issues so far, but that wasn't really a problem for him in the minors at all. So I don't really think that's a big concern here. The upside to me is so high that I'm willing to put him ahead of Carlos Rodon, let's say, who I think does have quite a bit of upside, but who I have pretty significant question marks about.
Yeah, so Mike, I mean, Chris alluded to it, but that Castillo was sort of a fringy prospect from a top 101 sort of standpoint, but because he was with the Marlins, he was actually their number two ranked prospect by the prospect team at BP coming into the year before he got traded to the Reds for Dan Straley. So, I mean, Castillo's always a guy we thought had talent, but I don't know if you've had a chance to watch him at all, but I know you're big on the NL, so you've probably gotten a chance to see him, you know, a time or two. But what do you think of Luis Castillo so far?
I really am impressed with the stuff. I didn't think he, you know, it's like anything else. I don't know if I mentioned this on, I don't think I did mention this on last week's show because I did it afterwards. So, you know, I went to see at Lakewood, I went to see Sixto Sanchez. It was a spur of the moment thing on Wednesday. Like, and actually, I didn't even know he was pitching when I left. And then I'm texting Brett, you know, right before I leave. He's like, you know, Sixto's pitching, right? I'm like, no. And you know, you watch
cheating.
Yeah, because I don't want to be late. And you know, you watch him, and you like you hear reports about a guy like this, and you're like, yeah, people are probably exaggerating. Like, it can't be real. That's my feeling about Castillo. Like, I couldn't believe I didn't see that game, Chris, but I've seen him pitch, and I couldn't believe how hard he was throwing. I thought there was some exaggeration there. You know, really what it comes down to with a pitcher like this or with any young pitcher, and, you know, Chris, if you agree or disagree, you can, you know, chime in. I believe in that he has the potential to do this, you know, at some point, but will it be as a reliever? Will it be as a starter? Something I agree with everything you said about him as a starter, but something that gets me nervous is the Reds seem to have a lot of pitchers like this.
Yeah.
They had, you know, their pitcher tonight, Romano, was a guy who is that guy too, who, you know, you watch him and you're kind of like, well, you know, he's got really good stuff, but, you know, unlike Castillo, you look at his numbers, it's like, I can't believe his strikeout rates are so low and he's just a two-pitch pitcher. You know, George, you might know this better than I do because you're on Tino and you work more on the dynasty and the prospect side. But It seems to me that the Reds, developmentally speaking, don't have that finishing touch with pitchers. These guys get to the majors and they're two-pitch pitchers. The pitches they throw are great for sure. But major league hitters, you know, we talk about this incessantly on the show. Major league hitters, like, really, any two-pitch pitcher or almost all of them. I mean, there's, you know, a couple of exceptions on the high end of the spectrum. They generally wind up getting hit, and they, you know, maybe they don't get hit to the point that they're knocked out of the league, but they get hit to the point where they're going to put up like a four and, you know, be okay. And yeah, they'll still get the strikeouts, but they're not going to be elite. So that's my question with Castillo. The other thing with Castillo, he's not that young. You know, he's not coming up as like a 21 or 22 year old. He's 24. I don't want to.
He's a weird prospect.
Yeah, I don't want to suggest
because he wasn't a starter, I think, until he was like 22. The Marlins actually acquired him from the Giants and moved him to the starting role at 22. Yeah, he hadn't started a single game.
You're right about that. He didn't start until the middle of 2015 or exclusively in high A. And, you know, before that, you're right. The Giants had him as a reliever, and it was probably to save his arm. But, you know, usually the route when you want to save a guy's arm, and you see this with the Phillies and Sixto, you know, 6-0 in that game, I think, threw like 70 or 65 pitches, six innings or something like that. That's usually the route where they get the reps, but they're like, all right, we'll give you four or five innings, you know, because you're 18 or 19 or whatever, and then we'll sit you down and you won't pitch for 4 or 5 days.
And that was why I framed my entire Luis Castillo piece around the whole concept of 10-step. There's no such thing as a starting pitching prospect there's no such thing as a pitching prospect just because, like, you know, we tend to view it as, especially in like a dynasty context, don't invest too much in starting pitchers because there's so much that can go wrong for them. There's so much that can get in their way on their way to greatness. Look at Lucas Giolito and Tyler Glass now, two guys who were drafted pretty much across the board in 2016 and have really done absolutely nothing in the majors. But it works the other way. We see guys come out of nowhere, and Luis Castillo didn't come out of nowhere, but for fantasy purposes, he wasn't on anyone's radar this season. And when you talk about the pitch, you know, him being a two-pitch pitcher, I think that was the book on him coming in. He's actually thrown his changeup more than he's thrown his slider so far. It's only five starts, but he's thrown his changeup right around 20% of the time, and my working assumption has been that that's just a pitch that he's gotten a feel for this year.
Yeah, I'm with Chris. I'm with you from the standpoint that it's always guys that we don't expect who come up and pitch well. You know, Robert Gazelman a year ago was like
Severino.
Severino coming back. Michael Fulmer last year was not a guy we thought would come in and do what he did. I know the strikeouts tailed off in the second half, and you know they're still down, but he's a really good pitcher. And when I look at Castillo, I think Mike kind of really alluded to it, but the comp I always have is sort of Raisel Iglesias. Like, we've seen this before. And Iglesias is a different story because of the injuries that, you know, and then the shoulder forcing him to the bullpen. But when he came up in 2015, you know, he made 16 starts, struck out nearly 10 per nine. Control was good, walks under 3 per nine. He was great.
Everyone's favorite breakout last season.
Right. So,
like, everybody in the industry.
Yeah. So I'm with you from the standpoint that, given the volatility with young pitchers especially, you need to take the plunge on guys when you can. So I'm all on board with jumping on in Castillo. But, you know, there are 100 cautionary tales. And
sure.
We'll see. But Castillo has certainly been very good to start his career. So my last question on this topic, and article's great, by the way. Everyone should go check it out. But, Chris, what are some of the key sort of components or analytics that you're looking for in a young pitcher? When you're just scouting talent and you're looking at a guy's profile, what are some of the first things that you gravitate towards? Because I think we always end up back on this conversation of benchmarks and what do you care about when you're looking at young pitchers. And I'd be fascinated to know a little bit of your process when you're going through this, when you're writing something like you did on Castillo.
For me, I'll compare Castillo to someone who a lot of people have remained very excited about, and the results have been good this season, but I'm totally out on, and that's Taijuan Walker, mm-hmm. who's got that, really, Taijuan Walker has an incredible fastball. It's not one of the hardest in baseball, but it's pretty hard, but it's just like, he just gets so many swinging strikes with this pitch relative to other pitchers' fastballs, and when he's on, you'll see him rack up 12, 15 swinging strikes with that fastball, and it's impossible for hitters to catch up to. But he has no secondary pitches, and that's the thing that really, you know, I look at, obviously, the big, you know, the strikeout rate, swing strike rate, fifth, all that stuff. But once I start getting granular, and what really gets me excited about someone is if I see a guy who has, you know, with Luis Castillo is a really good example of this. I'm tracking his first couple of starts, and I realize he's throwing this changeup a lot, and he's getting good results with it. He's getting a lot of swinging strikes. Batters aren't really catching up to it. Maybe it's the scouting report isn't out on him yet, and they didn't think he had this changeup, and as soon as guys start figuring it out, he'll come back around. But for me, if you have a varied pitch mix that you can get, you can go out there and get a lot of swinging strikes with your secondary pitches especially, that's what starts to get me really excited about a young pitcher. And it's, you know, I fell for Kevin Gausman this year. I thought he was going to be really good because that split change, when it's on, can be a devastating pitch. And he started throwing it a lot in the second half last season. It was fueling his breakout in the second half, and he just hasn't had it this season. But that's what I look for.
I'm
looking for variety.
That's a really great point. And for everybody listening to this, if you go to Baseball Prospectus, we have PitchFX leaderboards, which Harry Pavlidis and the stats team. Mike, I'm sure you use these all the time, right?
I use those religiously. They're great.
They're fantastic. And
we should probably talk about them more, at least mention them every week, because they're a great aspect.
Yes, that's another one where, like, when I got really excited about Lance McCullers, was when I looked at his curveball and I compared it to everyone else, and I look at, like, the league average swing strike rate on a curveball is like 12-13%, something like that, and he's consistently getting like 20-25% swing strikes with his curveball, like slider type numbers. That's for me when I looked at him and I was like, okay, this guy's got a really special pitch that he can throw in any count to get a swing and miss.
Right. That's a great point. So if you're listening to this, the BP PitchFX leaderboards, that's where, you know, when I'm writing the waiver wire columns, this is why I was in on Trevor Cahill in April, because the swing strike rates all backed it up. And when we watched him pitch, you know, this guy's getting a lot of swings and misses. And so that's a good place. That's where I usually go to find that type of information. But I also look at command and control, you know, with the stuff. You know, that matters to me. That's why guys like James Paxton, Alex Wood, it's not just the stuff is great, but they have an idea of what they're doing. They can locate all their pitches, and they know how to attack guys. So, yeah.
Conversely, Michael Pineda, really good control. Doesn't walk anyone. Jeff Samardzija this season, great control. But I think those are two key examples of the difference between command and control. And I don't know if Jeff Samardzija Michael Pineda, I just don't think has great command, and I think that's just consistently proven. I wonder if Jeff Samardzija is just like, just walk someone. It's okay. Like, someone needs to just, like, sit Jeff Samardzija and be like, it's okay if you walk him, just don't give up the home run, you know?
Yeah, throw a pitch on the black or close to the black, and if you walk a guy as opposed to throwing a meatball, you know, on 3-2, that's okay.
I think Robbie Ray is a guy who that is, you know, we've always struggled to analyze. But
definitely not afraid to walk guys.
No, but he avoids hard contact a little bit by doing it. So I think he's still finding that perfect balance, but it feels like he's getting close to me. I don't know if you've watched Robbie Ray at all, but he's pitching tonight. But
he's a weird dude because he's someone that I look into, like, the more granular pitch by pitch. And, you know, he's developed this curveball, and I think he's credited Zach Greinke for it this year. And usually you look at a curveball, it's not a swing and miss pitch. It's usually like a pitch to contact, get weak contact, get ground balls, especially. A lot of guys are looking for ground balls with their curve. Mm-hmm. And, like, all that stuff has moved in the opposite direction. He's getting more strikeouts, he's walking more, and he's getting fewer ground balls. And it's just like, I don't get Robbie Ray. I don't understand anything about him.
He's also started grunting on every pitch, and like he's like a science experiment that you watch him and you go, all right, I don't know what's gonna happen. Is it like the volcano gonna erupt, or is he gonna be able to save it? I don't know. He's great.
He's fascinating.
Oh, he's the best. All right, so hey, we wanted to wrap up on this, and Mike, do you play fantasy football at all? I don't remember if we've talked about this at all, but do you play in any?
I haven't played in years. So Tout Wars, oddly enough, has like a fantasy league that they do for the baseball people. I'm considering doing it this year. But no, I haven't played fantasy football in a lot of years.
All right. So I know this is a topic that a lot of our listeners probably struggle with, but we're getting training camp starts. I know I'm in New England, so the 19-0 conversation, all that stuff. It has already started, folks.
Yeah.
Training camp opens in about a week and a half here, and fantasy owners, I think, they struggle because they start to switch over into football mode, and they kind of steer the car away from fantasy baseball a little bit. So how do you, as an analyst, you know, you've got, you know, your feet in so many pools here. How do you keep it all together, basically? Because it feels like you got so much going on at this time of the year, prepping for fantasy football with the baseball season still going on, Chris.
Yeah, it's tough. September especially, because that's also when I start ramping up. That's football season starting. I start ramping up for fantasy basketball, which I've covered over the last six seasons. And so it's really hard. You have to make sacrifices. And my sacrifice is I don't watch Game of Thrones, you know?
Good thing Brett's not here.
Yeah, I mean, no, I really, like, it's you do reach a point where you have to where you can't keep up with everything that you want to keep up with. You can't you know, it's harder to keep up with television shows that you want to, because you've got to make sure that you're watching at least some baseball, because you can't follow it all that much during the day because you're doing football drafts. And, you know, next week we start doing two fantasy football mock drafts every week, and I'm in this league called the Scott Fish Bowl, which I think has 720 teams that are currently currently drafting. It's 720 teams spread across like 36 12-team divisions or something.
Hold on.
It's like a 22 round.
Wait, this is football?
Yeah. So you draft against your league, and then you play against everyone.
Oh, okay.
It's the first year I'm doing it, but like, this is already starting. Like, that's the thought process that I have in my head of, like, I'm like trying to figure out, like, man, who's the next young starting pitcher to get excited about? Jacob Faria has been great. And, oh, Luis Castillo is awesome. And then it's also like, do I take Devin Funchess or do I take Mike Glennon with my 17th round pick? And it's just, it's a lot, but
yeah.
You know, a lot of people have worse jobs.
All right, I have one serious fantasy football question. You're going to have to reconcile this for me. When do I take Mike Gillisley, or how much do I spend on him at an auction? Because I think he's really good, and so does everyone else. What do I do?
I am on the opposite side of that.
Oh, no.
I'm not gonna touch any New England Patriots this year. They got too many guys. I'm not smart enough to know who's going to be the guy who actually gets the touches. And Mike Gillisley has, you know, one really good year as a role player in Buffalo. And is that really enough for me to say he's going to be the one who bucks the trend of Bill Belichick being completely ornery about his running backs? What if he fumbles in week one and Bill Belichick, you know, casts him off to a faraway deserted island in the middle of the Pacific? It's just like, I will not be touching the Patriots this year. Maybe my teams will be worse for it, but I can't deal with that headache.
That's totally fair. I wish Deion Lewis, I could go back to that. I think it was, what, the 2015 season when he tore the ACL?
He was so
amazing.
Good in that season.
Whoa.
Now he might get cut because football is...
It's cruel.
Football is just... There's nothing permanent in football.
I actually wanted to ask you, because we talk about this a little bit on Twitter, so as you probably know, since I live in Philadelphia, I'm becoming a bandwagon Sixers fan. It's the first team I've ever permitted myself to bandwagon.
Seems like a smart idea.
Not bad.
Yeah, are you a Celtics fan?
No. Celtics fans.
For some reason, I thought that.
Celtics fans hate me on Twitter. I grew up a Heat fan.
Okay. So you're from Florida?
Oh, yeah. I've lived in South Florida my entire life.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were, you know, I know a lot of the CBS guys, so... Like, CBS is funny because it's funny to me at least, because I think the policy is, like, you guys have to live down there, right? Like, there's no telecommuting or, you know, you can come down for...
No, we have people who are remote, but in fantasy, we want everybody in-house.
Well, that's what I mean. So, like, for fantasy, it's all, like, down there. That's different. Like, well, BP doesn't have an office, like, so we're just all over the place. And I know other sites are... You know, it's up to you, but then there's sometimes travel requirements. Like, I know for ESPN, like, I live a town over here in PA from Eric Carabel.
Okay.
and like Tristan Cockcroft's up in Jersey, but they all try to live in the Northeast, even though they're not in Bristol, because they're kind of like, well, if we have to go up there, you know, it's a drive and it's not a flight.
I'm a South Florida born and raised. Went to college in Miami, not the University of Miami, because they have much bigger grade requirements than I could muster coming out of high school.
So you're a real Heat fan. You're not one of those like
LeBron, you're a fan. I'm actually the contrarian who, when LeBron got there, I looked at the team and I was like, I like all these guys, but like rooting for them's not that much fun. The only team I actually root for, and I think this gives you a sense of my psyche when it comes to sports, is the Marlins.
Okay, yeah.
And I feel like that's because I, deep down, don't feel like I deserve love.
Well, you were there for their championships at least, though, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, I was 9 and 15 when they won their two championships.
So I think most fans, like I'm a Mets fan, so
yeah.
I think most fans suffer. Like, you know, unless you're a Yankee fan, I don't know, they've been good in the last decade.
But as a Mets fan, you've had reason for optimism in the past. Like, you've been able to go into a season and say, man, Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard. The Marlins,
last year going in was optimistic. This year was optimistic. You know, then before that, I think it was like 2006. So, but I know what you're saying. Like every few years,
whereas the Marlins
that season where, the Marlins, like even the years they won, it was kind of a complete surprise out of left field. And when they won in '97, like, you know, in '98, they, you know, and like you said,
gone,
you were nine, but they pretty much like 2 days later, you know. And I think Grant Brisby, you know, and I don't know if you saw this, you know, he had a great piece on, he wrote about the sculpture.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that piece was terrific. But he talked about it, you know, and Grant, like me, is old, you know, and sorry, Grant, if you're listening, which I know you're not, but he was talking about the history and how, you know, Huizenga, even during the celebration, was like in the back of his mind, like, yeah, I'm still gonna tear this down. You know, I'm not swayed by this. Like, can you imagine being that person where, like, most people be like, you know, I'm gonna make this work, and then maybe, like, you know, a few days later they'd have the, like, wow, I'm a businessman. But even in the moment, he's like, nah, you know what? Like, this is great. I don't care. Like, I'm gonna go back to selling videos, and that's going to be my, you know, my business model.
Yeah, you know, given how much the Marlins are about to be sold for, investing in Blockbuster instead of the Marlins, not necessarily the best business idea by Wayne Huizenga.
True. Well, as Phil pointed out, he's still a billionaire. So anyway,
he's doing okay.
Before we go, because we're closing in an hour, I don't want this to become one of those super long podcasts. So you're not a Celtics fan, but I just wanted to ask you. I don't think the Sixers will make the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm.
But like, do you think what's their trajectory? Not just to make the playoffs, but to actually be like top of the East, like, you know, like top three or four seed, like somewhere in there.
Well, I don't think there's ever been a higher variance team in professional basketball, and maybe never in sports history, than the Philadelphia 76ers right now, because Joel Embiid, you know, he talks a big game, and there's this great video of him when he finds out what his rating on NBA 2K is this year, and he's only an 85, and he's like, I should be at least a 95. And, like, he should either be a 95
that's
or
great.
A 4.
Well, that's completely fair. Like, Embiid is, like, so, like, you know, he is the most fun, like, player. And, you know, he, like, locally, he's even a little bit more fun. Like, there's this guy here, maybe you've heard of him, Howard Eskin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Eskin's, like, a local host, and, like, he thinks he's a big deal. He's an older guy. You know, actually, his son Spike is also in the media.
Yeah.
You know, even though Spike's a legacy, like, Spike's actually really good at what he does, and you know, he's not just one of those, like, yeah, you're in media because your dad, like, he is, but he also deserves it. But like, Howard was making some point about Embiid, and Embiid, like, just in like a 7-word tweet, like, dunked on him, and Eskin's spending days, like, Howard, not the son, like, days trying to defend him. Like, dude, like, just give it
up. I'm not owned.
Yeah, but essentially, like, give it up. You've lost. And but I get it, like, Embiid's a fun guy. But at some point, and, you know, you see this especially in Philadelphia, where, like, there hasn't been a winner since the Phillies. And people here would, you know, kill their first – well, you know, sell their firstborn for an Eagles championship. And I'm not really exaggerating. You know, they would. And that's what's frustrating. I think for the Sixers now, it's like, oh, my God, like, there's this potential for this thing to happen. But you're absolutely right. Like, if Embiid is a injured player, is brilliant for 20, 25 minutes a game for 40 games a season, that's not going to cut it.
He's played 33 games in 3 years. But those 33 games were, like, almost something that we've never seen before. Like, it was almost unprecedented.
Well, the Sixers had that month, and they had that month without Simmons and Fultz where they went 10 and 5. I think it was in January. And that's when I really got sucked in. Like, I was watching it being a year. I made the decision of, like, okay, I'm going to bandwagon this, like, when they're still bad. So that, like, in 4 or 5 years, you know, people will say, oh, you're a bammer. It's like, well, yes, but I spent, you know, a year or two watching bad basketball. And then all of a sudden that month, like, you're watching, like, oh, my God, like, this team – pretty much with just him, you know, and I know Dario's good and a couple.
Yeah,
of
Dario's okay.
Right, but yeah, I mean, the way people talk about Dario here, you wouldn't know that, but yeah, Dario's okay. But like, they didn't have all these other guys, and you're like, wow, like Embiid by himself is taking this bad or subpar team and making them really good.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know who the Joel Embiid of baseball is, and this actually has a Marlins tie-in. Do you think you guys have
Stanton?
A guess? No. I was going to go with Carter Capp's 2015 season, where for like 40 innings he struck out everyone, and then he just hasn't pitched, basically.
He was unbelievable, and every time I saw him, I thought, how does his arm not go flying into the third base dugout?
I saw him in Fenway, and it was like an out-of-body experience. You're like, I can't believe this guy exists. Like, what he's doing is nuts. Crazy.
Yeah, he was, and you know, he's shone too bright. Some stars burn out too bright.
Well, hey, I hope everything goes well for the Sixers. I'm rooting for you, Mike, and for everyone.
That was all
Philly.
I really had. I you know, since we have, you know, Chris is a multi-sports. I just wanted to. Yeah, I just want you know, basketball is the one sport where when it picks up for a team and in a city, it really picks up fast. Like, you know, we saw it with Golden State.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that elsewhere. And here, you know, I can tell you, like, people here are already excited about the potential for what they could do.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I have said that Dario Saric is just a decent player. And
which
I've
he
just
is.
Had, like, my mentions have just been nuclear for hours. So I very much understand the passion of the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, the, you know, Philly fans in general, like Carson Wentz, apparently, because he has some receivers, is going to be like a top five quarterback, according to some. And like, okay, we'll see.
Oh, I've had the, yeah, maybe I just don't like Philadelphia. I've gotten into a lot of
I don't think it's
skeptical you. Debates.
I don't think it's you, just to tell you. I think it's some of the more ardent fans here. You know, it's like any other city. There's some smart fans here, too.
Even the Philly fanatic was trashing you on Twitter. It was terrifying. Not great. All right, so, hey, Chris, we have an encyclopedia of knowledge here in fantasy sports. I have to close on this. I want you to give me one name for both of these questions, but if you could trade for one player the rest of the season in fantasy baseball, who would it be? Not an obvious, like, hey, Joey Votto, like, you know, he's obviously great, but who's someone maybe under the radar that you look at and you go, all right, I'm trying to trade for this guy in every league. Who's a guy that you really like right now?
Is Manny Machado too obvious? Is he too obvious of a...
No, he has so many hard hit balls. It's nuts. I don't get it. He should be much better.
If he's too obvious, I'll throw out a big name that a lot of people have just given up on, who I think is going to have a great second half, Kyle Schwarber.
Ah, good one.
I would love to buy low on Kyle Schwarber right now.
All right, so everyone loves sleepers in fantasy football. Who's one guy that you find yourself looking at in the late rounds a lot?
I'll go with Zach Ertz, and I don't... He's kind of an established guy, but I have this, and Eric Ebron is also another guy who I'll throw out there. If the only red flag that you have is that you don't score touchdowns, you are someone that I'm going to target, because touchdowns are such a random, fluky thing. There's only, you know, a good player gets 10 of them in a year, a bad player gets 3. You're talking about the difference between 7 plays over the course of a full season. I will always target the guy who does everything but score.
Plus, Carson Wentz is a top five quarterback.
Exactly. Carson Wentz is going to dominate.
Dropping dimes all over the field. All right. Hey, Chris Towers, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
We're gonna take a quick break. Mike and I will come back and wrap up the show. But hey, anything you want to plug before we let you go here? What are you working on lately for CBS?
Go check out the Luis Castillo piece. And I just published actually something that I wrote in May, something that I literally wrote two months ago yesterday that I published today. And that was just kind of an in-depth statistical dive into how Freddie Freeman turned himself into one of the best players in baseball. Mm. I wrote it on May 17th. That night, he got hit by a pitch and went on the DL. So I couldn't publish it, but now's as good a time as any. So, go to cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball and check that out.
That's hashtag evergreen content right there with Freddie Freeman. You can publish there that anytime. Absolutely. Hey, so this is Chris Towers here. You can follow him on Twitter at @CTowersCBS. Chris, hey, thanks so much. Friend of the pod. Thank you for being here, buddy. Appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. Friend and fan of the pod.
Yeah, that's great to hear, and it was great to have you on. This was fun.
Thank you.
Awesome. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 142 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank our guest once again, Chris Towers of CBS Sports, for coming on. He was a lot of fun. Mike, that was one of the more fun conversations we've had in a while. We touched on like a ton of different stuff.
Yeah, we've got to talk about other sports for the people who really, you know, do listen to us but are interested in football and basketball. We didn't hockey. Oh well.
There's not a lot going on with the Flyers these days, is there?
I don't think so. I think they're in a rebuild too, but they moved to the bottom of the list here in Philadelphia behind the Sixers, the Eagles, and the Phillies, maybe in that order.
That's not great. So you can reach all of us on Twitter. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us. If you send us a question there, we'll usually get to it. You can follow Mike at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. If you liked Chris's stuff and you're not following him already, like you should be, he is at CTowersCBS. You can subscribe to Baseball Perspectives with a one-year premium membership so you can read all of our content. Mike has his expert fab reports up there. I'm writing every transaction analysis, fantasy impact under the sun right now. I'm just buried in them, so a lot going on, and you can read all of our stuff there. If you do the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Rave reviews on that. Everyone loves that service. So, what else? Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. If you enjoy the show, leave us a rating and a review. That would really help us out, boost our ratings and reviews. I don't think there's anything else. There's no more ballpark events, right? You were at the one in Pittsburgh last week. You got to tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun. And unfortunately, Harry Pavlidis couldn't make it. But Sean made it from our site on Harry's team. And it was a smaller panel for the BP side. But there were a couple, but the GM and the scouting side for the Pirates was really good. The reporting segment was good. And the game itself was kind of a dud. It was a 4-0 game. But I'd never been to PNC. PNC is a beautiful park. Mm. And the best part about it is it's like right in the city, like right in the heart of everything. And it was just a great time. So, you know, if you ever have a chance to get one of these events, definitely do so. We had a good time. And there is one more event, although I think tonight, so by the time people listen to this, there won't be tickets on sale. It's for Minnesota.
Yeah,
and
that one's sold out as we're recording this, I think.
Oh, and now it's sold out? Yeah,
it's pretty much sold out. So
9 tickets left, like, around 6 p.m., so yeah, I'm not...
Yeah. Well, hey, make your plans early next year. Make a weekend out of it. Go to Pittsburgh or the Mets. We had one at Citi Field. We had one in Baltimore, too, this year, so... A lot of great events every year for the ballpark series. So make sure you go check those out for next year. So for Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Do you want to tell everyone who our guest is for next week?
Yeah, our guest is going to be DJ Short of Roto World. And, you know, it's funny, we've been trying to get him on for almost 2 years. And finally, our schedules all worked out. So we're having a nice run of guests here. We do miss you, Brett, but we are glad that we're able to fill in with some pretty good people in the industry.
Yeah, DJ's great. So really looking forward to that conversation. So until our next show, hey, everybody, happy trade deadline coming up. I'm sure there's a lot that's going to go down before our next show. So we'll have plenty to talk about then. If you need anything in the meantime, hey, hit us up on Twitter. We'll have some analysis for you. So that's going to do it for us. Have a great week, everyone. So long.
Bye-bye.